Welcome, everybody, to Capes and Scowls West.
West.
Issue number 23.5.5, baby. Reviews. And we got a lot coming at you. So, without further ado, why don't you take us away, Matt?
All right. Well, I'm going to try to not meander and go straight for five quick hits.
Quick hits. Pew, pew. Pew, pew.
Batman number 47.
I feel like we need some pow hits for that.
Right? This is, I believe, is the end of the Gift storyline from Tom King and Tony Daniel. Holy fucking shit. I'm spoiling this for you right now. The end sequence is Bruce Wayne shooting himself in the head and splattering blood all over Booster Gold. And then going back, Booster Gold goes back to our current present time. And he is having psychological problems trying to wipe away the blood that isn't there anymore. Freaking amazing. The wow. Gift is going to go down as one of the great, like, side Batman stories. It is... You know, Booster Gold's whole premise was that he went back in time to try to save Bruce's parents to give him and Selina a wedding present, which would be, you know, not having to be Batman. But that turns out to be an absolute clusterfuck, and that was the end sequence, was time traveling with one version of Bruce Wayne and watching him kill himself. Anyway, moving on to Darth Vader number 16, I still don't understand how this book can stay this consistently good. I didn't realize I needed Vader. I didn't realize I needed Admiral Raddus. And watching flashback moments from the Jedi's history as the Inquisitors attempt to kill one of the surviving Jedi, and they use former clone troopers in the Death Squads, and they are produced after the Order 66, which means that you can initiate Order 66 and the Inquisitor are all Jedi, so we'll see what happens there when that happens. Freaking great book. I can't say enough about it. Shattered Grid number 27, I'm going to refrain from saying any details about this.
Don't do it!
Excuse me, Mighty Morphin Power Rangers number 27, Shattered Grid part like 6, I think? I don't know. This is consistently the book I want to read, and the book I am most satisfied with right now is anything related to Shattered Grid. I feel like it is really awesome to read something with mythology that was within the most recent, you know, 30 years, as opposed to the 60 to 80 years of, you know, our standard big two. It's really interesting to see how the mythology has been built in this time. And I absolutely love Shattered Grid, and I'm glad I'm reading all components.
So good.
So good. Nice. Dr. Star and the Kingdom of Lost Tomorrows, issue number 3. I just want to say that... I kind of want to go back and read Black Hammer now because the story taking place in this universe has been great. It's Jeff Lemire and Max Fujimara, and it is just really interesting science fiction, slow storytelling that I really enjoy. And then Skills and Scoundrels number 9. I can't tap this book enough. This is a semi-silent issue. I would say the majority of the issue is silent, and I just gravitate towards that idea of trying to follow the story and get every character's emotion when there's no dialogue present, the show, not tell. And this is just awesome. It's very Little Mermaid-esque, the stolen voice. Yeah, you could read this without having read anything else in Scales and Scoundrels and absolutely love it. And it's wonderful. Written by Sebastian Gerner with art by Galad, and... those are my quick hits.
Nice.
So,
there you go. All right. So, I just got a couple quick hits as well. Just a few shouts outs. Firstly, I want to give a shout out to Derek Charm, the new artist for the Unbeatable Squirrel Girl. I like it so far. I'm enjoying it. It still has a sort of light feel to it. Very not extremely cartoony, but just enough. Draws her a little, and this is like a very small thing, but the only thing I like more about Erica Henderson's rendering of Squirrel Girl is that her Squirrel Girl is a little like thicker, like she has like actual like muscle and stuff like that, and this Derek's Squirrel Girl is slightly the classic like thin female superhero. It's the only thing I have to say about that. Good, though. The other one that I want to do is Eternity Girl number 3. Just because this story is progressing exponentially. It's getting crazy. So, like, So, like, her superpower is basically, I didn't even realize, like, the extent of what this means until this issue. She doesn't exist. She's, like, a 30-yard radius field of atoms. What? Basically. So, like, within this 30-yard radius, she can control everything down to the atomical level.
What?
And that's what gives her her form, is just, like, consciously, like, holding it in and all this stuff. And then at the end, she realizes something else that control... And she's been trying to kill herself this whole time, too.
Right.
So she's like, well, I can control stuff down to the atomical level. That means fission. And so she's standing there on, like, the roof of her building at the end of it and just starting to, like, explode.
What?
Basically.
Wow, if you're gonna go out with a bang?
Yeah. No, seriously.
That's a terrible pun for a terrible situation.
So, so, the way this is wrapping up, too, even though it's mostly about just depression and stuff like that, she could be one of the most powerful, like, canon characters in the DC, like, universe.
That's awesome.
Like, she's just, yeah.
Cool.
Anyway, so those are my two quick hits. What do you got for us, Kat?
Well, I don't really have anything of my own, apparently, this week. So, the first one I want to talk about, mostly because I just want to...
You are us. We are Cakes and Scales West.
I mostly just want to get the sadness out of the way, which is Exit Stage Left, the Snagglepuss Chronicles, number 5.
God.
Wow, talk about, like, leading into a huge finish. I mean, spoilers, Huckleberry Finn hangs himself.
Hound.
Damn it, Finn. Damn it.
Yeah.
Huckleberry Hound hangs himself.
Oh.
Yeah.
Because he was caught in that quote-unquote pervert raid.
Yeah, and not only that,
well,
his lover at the time was the one to arrest him during the raid.
Yeah.
Wow.
And he punched him in the face for it.
Yeah.
And
that,
I mean,
that scene too, when he just looks up at him, because his lover is a cop and then they have to come and raid the egg. And when he just looks... He just looks at him, he's like, you too, and just Billy Club right to the face.
I do want to read one thing, and it's, so it's after he kills himself, we run into Snagglepuss, who's being, you know, he's in front of a court about, of course, you know, the Red Scare.
He's in the McCarthy trials right now, like, testifying.
So, she brings up a picture, she's like, who's this? He's Huckleberry Hound, the best friend I've ever had. And it's and then you've got, I can't remember her name now, but she's the
Gigi Allen.
Yeah, Gigi Allen. She's like, and you are aware that he's currently being charged with public indecency. I am, but you'll never convict him. Oh, and why not? Because you've already killed him. He committed suicide last night. And the shock and awe on her face of what she did. And the one thing that's always, that's starting to confuse me and make me question Gigi Allen is I'm like, how can you be in a homosexual relationship and have such a strong conviction about busting the other guy's face in for what she's doing? And then I finally figured it out. She says, if you only kept it private.
Yeah.
And I'm like, it's a very toxic homosexual thing. Like,
feeling,
you don't need to run around telling everybody you're gay because it's stupid. But, you know, for me personally, not to have the ability to walk around and hold my girlfriend's hand is ridiculous.
Yeah.
So, that's really the big point I have on that.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, the character of Gigi Allen has really, like, internalized this whole, the country at this time, like, un-Americanness as evil, and homosexuality.
Well, what the government
is
decided,
considered,
what the government decides
un-American.
Is un-Americanness is evil.
Yeah, and since there's a law against homosexuality, that's un-American, and anyway...
Yeah, so it's just...
Good.
It was finally the point, because I didn't understand.
And it's supposed to be a 6-part series, correct?
Yeah, the last one, so I'm...
I have no idea where they're going with this.
He served what's-her-name with the divorce papers. Mm-hmm. The other guy, I think, his lover, I think, left.
Yeah.
After he brought them together.
Pablo, I believe.
Yeah, after he brought them together.
He left back to Havana.
After they left together. He brought them together, and it's like, I don't know what's going to happen, to be quite honest. So, I'm really excited for the last and final issue. I'm so happy I read this.
Yeah.
Like,
cool.
Get that dender depression out the way.
All right, what's next on the docket?
I think we'll jump into No Justice, Justice League No Justice, numbers 1 and 2. It's written by Scott Snyder, James Tynion IV, and Joshua Williamson, with art by Francis Monopoul and Marcus Toe.
Mm-hmm.
Issue number 1 for me was a real mixed bag of not good I thought it was a poor setup. I thought that the art shined. The art's fantastic.
I loved
in
the artwork in it, and that's probably why I was like, is this fine?
But I think it was mispaced. I don't know. It didn't feel like something I wanted to
continue.
Well,
I think the biggest problem is probably because normally with a lot of these stories, they're used to a 6-issue kind of deal.
Right.
And I think they're probably being rushed because they dropped it 2 issues to 4.
Well, and they want it to be done in a month.
That's the other thing. So I think that's part of it.
I think it's the weekly format that just bugs me. Mm. And so
it usually kills things.
Well, it's like you could just drop this as one story. Like, just give me, like, a $10
No
Justice, and that's the whole lead-in. Mm-hmm. But reading it in this format, I'm like, this is not, you know, this is not the pacing that I want for the story. I guess it's okay because I am getting the small bites, but I was very unhappy with issue number one. I didn't think that the setup made a whole lot of sense. It was all of a sudden like, here we go, and done. And I don't know. It didn't give me any time to breathe. Number two, however, I did quite enjoy. It did slow things down. You got the groups really forming.
Mm-hmm.
And I like the idea of the threat coming from beyond the source wall. I think that's a really interesting concept. I think it is kind of funny that we're dealing with celestial beings that are angry coming to our Earth. And that's exactly what's also happening in Avengers
right now. It might just be the fact, too, why I probably like number one. I fucking love the covers. They're so awesome.
The covers are great. I mean, the art is spectacular.
Oh, yeah, no, I completely agree.
It's better when Monopole is doing the art and not when it's Toe. Yeah. For me, that stuck out like a sore thumb. Toe is a competent artist, but Monopole has a very distinct style.
Yeah.
So,
I don't know. I guess it was probably because I read them right in a row, so it's probably why I didn't have that misstep of, oh.
Yeah.
So that might have been another part of it. I didn't mind number one. Number two was definitely better. Like, they're like, hey, which one do you want to read, too?
Yeah. I mean, it's 4 issues, so it's low commitment, so I'm not going to, like, stop reading it after that.
Like I said, the other part of it is I think they kind of fuck with them, because normally they are like, yeah, here's 6 issues. Do it in 4, yeah, and you have a month.
It's Snyder spearheading this, so I don't really think that that's a problem. I think there may be just, you know, having to deal with that much setup.
2 writers?
3.
Oh, there's... Yeah, see, that's when I always get worried, because I feel like when you have multiple writers, sometimes things get weird.
It is, but it's also the team that, like, Snyder has sort of, like, brought into DC as their mainstays. I don't know, I think...
You can't do things perfect all the time.
Right. And I love cosmic-level storytelling. I'm glad that this is kind of the direction that both major companies are going in, because...
I mean, I fucking hate space, and I enjoyed it, so...
You just hate space movies.
I don't know.
You're like, no, I just hate space.
No, like, you do anything sci-fi, and I'm just like, I'm out.
So you're telling me that if somebody came up to you and was like, yo, I got an extra ticket to space, like, to ride up on the rocket.
I don't even want to go to other countries.
All right.
That's fair. Anyway.
No Justice. Not Patrick. What do you got next for us to share a discussion on? Because
apparently I'm a drop ass. Because
we are Legion.
Yeah. So the next I have for us is... this is the Mighty Thor #1 at the Gates of Valhalla. This is just a one shot, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah.
Denouement,
if you will, of the Jane Foster story.
Yeah. So this is a two-part issue. The first one, the first part seems like a standalone story, and then the second part seems like a continuation.
For her audience and for me, she's dead, right?
No,
she actually was saved.
Yep.
Really?
Yep. I know, yeah.
I'm shocked. What the fuck are they doing now?
Yeah. The second story just seems like a continuation of the arc from the Mighty Thor and where it's going to continue from here.
Oh, okay.
But, God, this first story, man. It's a heart-wrenching one.
The granddaughters of Thor.
Yeah, the granddaughters of Thor, like, travel back in time to come.
The Mighty,
like,
Thor or regular Thor?
Regular Thor.
Thank you.
Odin's son. The granddaughters of Odin's son travel back in time to find the mightiest Thor in history to get her advice on stuff.
And but you don't realize it's her advice.
Yeah. Yeah, well, at first, because they keep traveling to different Thors, throughout the timeline, and then, you know, then there she is. She just, like, bumps into them, all with a cane and everything. Oh, man. And then she's like, oh, you don't want me? Like, look at me. Are you kidding me? I'm, like, dying of cancer. And they're like, no, you're the mightiest Thor ever. Like, we came here on purpose. And then she's crying.
There's still thunder in her veins.
Mm-hmm. There's still
thunder in her veins. I mean, I hate doing this, but I feel like we always have to say Lady Thor just to, like, figure out because there's the Thor.
I think Mighty Thor and Odin's son are an easy way to...
To me, she's Thor and he's Odin's son.
Yeah. Well, and I think it's smart too. We're tangenting again. I'm sorry, but the fact that the new series is just called Thor, and her series was the Mighty Thor, so it's like okay, there you go.
Nice delineation. Sense. And then towards the end of it, oh man, I was crying a little bit on this page when one of the granddaughters, I forget which one, lets Jane ride with her on the hammer one more time, like fly.
That's so cool.
Yeah.
Patrick's just crying, sobbing in his room. Patrick, are you okay? Don't worry about it!
The hammer, and she's flying!
I want to talk a little bit about this specific part of the issue, because, I mean, I didn't care for the second part. I thought it was good, but...
It was fine. Yeah. Compared to the first part, though.
Like, you should have led with this and ended with this.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Well, it makes more sense what they did, because this is the first part is the denouement to the previous story, and then the next one is, okay, we're still going here.
Yeah, there's still shit happening, by the way.
So, shout out to Jason Aaron, just because I haven't read all of the issues of Thor. I'm sporadic at best. I've read Unworthy Thor. Mm-hmm. I've never had a problem reading a singular issue and following it. That's and true. Satisfied. I think it's great.
I'm pretty sure I picked up random ones, too, and it was the same thing. I've never had an
issue. I am now dedicated to finishing this epic. And I also want to shout out to Jen Bartel, the artist of the first story. Mm. I don't know if she does the colors as well. I think she does. I think it's everything. But unbelievable. I absolutely would love... I want her on Wonder Woman. Like, that would be, for me, one of the match made in heaven, like... Her art is so magical, like, and that's the way I, the only way I can describe it.
I'm like, I want a Mighty Thor and Wonder Woman team up.
I mean, it is like, she's got this.
That would be epic.
She came from the Gem and the Holograms book, and you see her on this, and it's like, this is just so beautiful.
I've seen artwork for that too. I was wondering why. Does this look familiar?
And she's fully digital. Like, looking at her stuff online, it's amazing.
Oh yeah.
But I really just. Amazing art. I was just in awe of what she was doing. And once again, I can't stay away from that. Like, it's ethereal. It's magical. So I just, just awesome book. If you didn't pick this one up, just go get it. It's an easy one to recommend.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's a good one. So, yeah. What do you have for us, Kat?
I guess we can hit, Coda if you want to do that, Nat.
Sure.
So... It's an interesting concept. I like it. I guess the problem that I had is I felt like the artwork was messy, and then I kind of thought about it for a little bit. Considering what the story is, it sort of makes the style and the feeling of messy make sense.
Yeah, the whole reason I was reading this book was because of the artwork. I was like, this is so pretty and weird and, like,
oh, wow. Goofy, I will say this,
and cartoony.
Shout out to Boom. I'm just saying, I love the thicker covers that they give
us.
Because they did that with another comic that we'll talk about here in a little bit, too. I'm digging these, like, thick covers like this because...
It feels like a premium product.
It does.
It feels like, you know, you're reading...
And it's like, I could literally go to my dad and he'll probably tell me that it's like laminated cardstock.
Right, exactly. And it feels nice.
Yeah, and it's just nicer than the regular, like, because I went to a Marvel... I tried to read a Marvel comic after I was, like, handling this one and the other one. And I'm like, what is this bullshit?
Right, it doesn't feel right.
Yeah, I'm like, I paid $3 for this. Where's my cardstock?
So the premise of Coda was written by Simon Spurrier with art by Mateus Bergara? I'm sorry. That's the first time I've had trouble with a name, but
I might actually be floored on that one.
It's a story. What's the lead character's name? I feel bad for saying that.
I don't know if his. I don't think they ever.
It's a really, like, small name. But anyway, he's like monk.
I thought they called him a, like, Mr. Because he wouldn't answer them on what his name was.
Gotcha.
Like, you know about his missing wife's name, but that's it.
Right, and that's the thing. So. It's a character who, it's framed about him writing to his dead wife, or his missing wife, I should say.
Missing wife.
And it is in a post-apocalyptic fantasy world. And
I think it's
100% post-apocalyptic, but it's in a sense that I've never seen before. Because when you say that, like, a post-apocalyptic event, usually your thought is, oh, it's going to be that we were in our times, something got destroyed, and now we're in a fantasy world. It is a fantasy world that had a cataclysm, and now everything is in low...
They don't have any magic.
They don't have any, well, they don't have any magic. They don't have much of the technology that they had previously.
Well, no, because I think mostly from my understanding, I read it rather quickly, but I think it's they don't have magic anymore. So the things that they were constantly used to and constantly having, they don't have anymore because right. And it messed with dragons, which are eternal beings, which is the first thing you run into. It messed with unicorns. Unicorns are fucking horrifying now.
Well, that I mean, he may not be a unicorn in name anyway. Pentacorn?
Pentacorn.
Mm-hmm. Pentacorn. But this is like, for me, with this and then something like Isola and Scales and Scoundrels, fantasy is back in a big creative way in comics, and I could not recommend this book enough. This... I don't know if it's better than Coda, because they're two very different stories.
You mean and, Isola?
Isola, yeah, thank you.
You're welcome.
But this is definitely, like, the core concept for me, I'm down. The idea of magic as a currency and its depiction in the little green vials just totally screams Legend of Zelda to me.
He even makes fun of them, because he's like, why are you trying to keep this world the same when it's different?
Yeah.
So... I thought it was pretty good. Like I said, the artwork was bothering me, and then I kind of sat down and thought about it for a little bit and why it's as messy as, like, why it seems messy to me, and, like, that's how the world is messy. Okay, makes sense. Let's draw some lines here.
Interesting.
Really
so
good.
So the format reflects the content, like,
I
very
would
well.
Say, yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's a conscious decision, but it is just definitely something that's better.
I think
especially something like comics as a medium, like, like, you can see that a little bit more often than other mm-hmm. stuff.
You know what
just
I think?
Just
because
it's such a, like, a multimedia thing
yeah.
that you can really, like, use different forms to really express all your ideas.
I think it sticks out more when it doesn't work. Mm-hmm. Like, when it's something that's a mismatch. I mean, we've talked about Mother Panic before.
Yeah, Mother, oh my God.
Which is funny. I mean,
mindfuck.
Once again, great artist, just not
just
matched
not,
to the content.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, just not for that one.
Cool.
Yeah.
But I can't recommend Coda enough. I don't know. That to me is like
I thought it was pretty
was
good. I think I'm subscribed to it.
Ironically
I'm
enough, that's
probably
the worst Led
it.
Zeppelin album.
Coda.
Yeah.
Awesome. All right, Pat. What do you got?
I think I really only have one more review over here.
But it's three issues.
Yeah, but it's three issues long.
But,
right?
Hang on, wait a minute. Surprise twist ending. It's one, but it's three.
Yeah. So, I have in front of me Barrier. This is written by Brian K. Vaughan with art by Marcos Martin.
Marcos Martin!
Marcos Martin.
Yeah,
excuse
me.
Whatever.
Me,
permiso.
That just makes me think of Gabriel Iglesias. Martin!
I'm
just a big
so
fan
this
of
is,
Marcos Martin.
Wait, this is a four-part miniseries?
Five.
Five-part
weekly.
Because
Image is not kind enough to be like two or one of five.
Yeah. So this is a five-part miniseries that issue one actually was Image's Free Comic Book Day comic.
There you go.
And it's the same. Like, the only difference between the buying one that they have for sale is a slightly bigger.
Slightly bigger on harder cardstock. Did the Free Comic Day
one
have the sketches on the back, too?
I believe it did. I have it right here. Why don't you go ahead and fill us in, though, on
sure.
some plot line.
So, Barrier is an exercise in the things that...
I was going to say exercise in misdirection.
Well, it's an exercise in the things that keep us apart. So, initially, the story is about a language barrier, and then it's the barrier between...
I don't think
initially,
it's
about the barrier between the... U.S. and Mexico.
Yeah, okay, so it's the barrier between U.S. and Mexico.
The
language barrier, and then...
I mean, if you look on... And even, like, it took me a minute to get this, but the cover of number one is actually the border.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Yeah. I mean, and it's just a fence and, like, a toll stop.
Yeah.
There's the barrier between our ability to communicate with interstellar species, and then the barriers in the spaceship that prevent contact between the different creatures.
Yeah.
There's like...
And this is three issues
this
in,
is
by the
three
way.
Issues. Yeah, this is one of the most intense comic book reads.
So yeah, this is a huge... Images like end of first issue reveals are just
amazing.
So amazing.
Yeah, so it is, I guess it's an alien abduction story at its core.
Yeah, so the story starts out with an immigrant coming up from Honduras, I believe he says. And there's this rancher that owns a ranch on the border Mexico. Yeah, so they're...
Well, her thing was is she was worried because she got a
she
warning.
She thought it was the cartels.
She got a warning from the cartels when she gets... I think she finds one of her horse's heads.
Yeah.
Decapitated and skinned.
Yeah.
But, like, interestingly enough, so, like, all the time with Liddy's character we have is in English, and then all the time with Oscar's character is in... 100% Spanish. And not like simple Spanish either.
No.
Yeah. So like.
It's like real conversational Spanish.
Yeah.
I'm like,
and not even like easy to translate. Cause I was trying to translate some of this and there's actually like a good bit of slang like in there too.
Damn.
Like, you know, Honduran slang.
It's phenomenal. I can't like.
But then after issue two, there's
so,
no.
My only thing is the reason, probably the biggest reason why I didn't like it. Was the fact that it just reminded me of that terrible Nicolas Cage movie where the world's going to shit and children are hearing weird noises, and at the very end they're like, aliens! And that's exactly what it reminded me of, and I was like,
no! Idea.
Yeah, I don't know what that movie
it's
is.
It's a terrible fucking movie. If you ever find it, don't watch it.
Yeah, I don't even know.
So, I want to discuss, and I know we don't have a ton of time, the degradation of communication through the first three issues. Because in issue one, it is a 50-50 split between the book being in English and Spanish. So if you don't read Spanish, then there's half of the book that you basically can't read.
Yep, yeah. That's exactly what it was.
You can kind of guess.
The
like,
second issue...
And that's probably the other reason I got frustrated.
The second issue is about 25% in English, about, I don't know, 25% Spanish, and then no dialogue or
the
aliens
dialogue. Except
illegible
dialogue, yeah.
Well, and the aliens speak in colors that cause our ears to bleed.
Yeah.
So you have a degradation of sound in that issue as, like, the issue progresses, there's less and less that's said.
Which is an amazing, like, stylistic choice, the way they do that. They just have, like, a blank speech bubble that's, like, green.
Yeah, and then there's one that's red and orange.
And then
it's
one
like,
that's
okay.
red and orange, and then, like, the minute our main characters hear this, just blood. Like, out of their ears.
And as a result, we go to issue number three.
Dude, imagine this book on freaking LSD.
Well, you go to issue number three, and there's no dialogue. Because both characters have had their ears blown out, they can't talk, and they can't understand the alien race. So it's a degradation of communication through the three issues.
Yeah. And then, the only words we get at all are in Oscar's, ostensibly, from what I understand, his son's, like, sketchbook.
Yes, yes. And
like, one of the few things, Oscar was abducted, like, with his backpack on, so there's, like, a couple items they have, and one of those things is his, like, son's, like, superhero sketchbook.
Yeah, where he envisions his dad as a super dad versus the Dino Mech.
Yeah.
This is
Power
like.
Rangers.
So they communicate through pictures and tattoos, and it's.
Yeah, like universal languages, basically.
And fire is something that sort of screws with the integrity of the ship.
Which is interesting because that's like one of the most primal things. Which is like very. Liddy is like such a primitive, like. Character like already in the introductions, like let's just talk about her first appearance in issue number two.
Yeah,
completely naked, holding like a horse bone,
right,
just standing there like, who the fuck are you? Like, seriously, like caveman-esque. And
I'm
then
just like sitting
issue,
over here, I'm
like,
that sounds like a super drunk night.
She's like starting a fire and like all
it
this
is,
stuff.
It's this weird thing too, because it's two people who ostensibly are not in great places in their lives. I mean, he's running, and is he running because of something with his kid, or is he running to his kid? Like, that's not 100% clear. Liddy is dealing with, like,
Her husband's
death, and then, like...
The cartels invading.
And being completely alone.
Open.
I mean, like...
Well,
because the
cartels are basically threatening her. This is going to be a path, whether you like it or not.
They spend a panel showing her getting shit-faced watching porn in her house.
Yep.
I mean, like, it's showing that just the mundanity of, like, having a shitty life. And I don't know. This was really intriguing to me as, like, I'm glad the sci-fi element is there, because I don't know that I could handle the human interest story of this being as dark as it is would be a little much for me.
I can't believe we've also come this far without mentioning the format.
Oh yeah, it's a widescreen over the top flip book. I mean, like, I don't really know the way to just, it's horizontal.
Yeah, it's aligned horizontal, so yeah.
And it's widescreen. It is thinner and longer than a standard comic book. It's very similar to a Silver Age style book.
Yeah, and the whole thing is very cinematic.
Yep.
And I think, I don't know why, but for some reason reading it, I mean, not just because it's a, like, slightly bigger too, but it just feels bigger. Like, even the Free Comic Book Day one, which is regular size, reading it, holding the spine horizontally, I guess, yeah. It just feels bigger. It makes it, yeah.
I also want to talk about the design of the aliens, because there's, like, they're really abstract with familiarities to other things. Like, there's a flower element and the element that looks almost like an eye. And when the two enter the room with Liddy, they almost stand upright. But I guess that could be a reflection of, like, how they're interpreting humans. Like, there's a lot. For three issues with very minimal dialogue, there's a shit ton of stuff happening in this book. Big push. I mean, it's Brian K. Vaughan.
Yeah.
When he's got a clear story to tell, you know?
Yeah, and not only is it, like, they are weekly issues, but they're bigger and they're, like, they are thicker content-wise. And it's still only $3.99, yep. So...
And it's not supposed to be collected, so this is it.
And so you get way more bang for your buck, definitely.
Well, we've hit a long mark with this one, so I think we can just say Barrier. It's good.
Barrier. Good. Buy it all.
I don't know who started last, but we'll have Kat just take over now.
Yeah.
Happy before Christmas!
Happy stuffs!
So
I got a creepy feeling from the very end of it, like, Uber, like, that weird, that weird elf thing. Was it an elf? Yeah. I mean, I don't know. No one's that goddamn happy.
That's true.
That was the moment in time, and then this, like, I don't know if they're doing it on purpose or not, but, you know, there's gotta be some point to this where it gets a little odd, but, so, like, legitimately...
What is it that we're reading?
I think it's about Christmas traditions.
No, it's what's the name of the book?
Oh, sorry. The Night Before Christmas, Zero's Journey, which is just, like, people kept calling it a continuation. It's not a continuation. It's a spinoff. Like, it's about Zero. It's not about Jack. So, literally, quite a quick read, because, like, the first, I think the last bit of reading in it is, like, the last three pages. There's, like, actual words. So.
Everything else is just beautiful art.
Just so pretty.
And barking.
And barking. I'm sorry. There were dog noises. Or dog onomatopoeias. But, I don't know, it's really pretty, really quick. I'm interested to see where this goes, because there has to... I mean, obviously, him just getting stuck there, there's got to be more to the story than him just getting stuck there, so... Also, who the hell is this creepy elf thing that we ran into? Because that's not Santa. Where is Santa? Where's Sandy Claus? So, I'd say pick it up. Super pretty. Really, really, really pretty. And I think if I'm correct... These are full color, and I think when it comes out in its full manga form, it'll be black and white.
Oh, that's shitty.
I think. I don't remember.
It's so pretty that's kind of a sad moment.
It's so pretty. I'm like...
I really enjoy that. One of the things that I like... There's been a weird theme of this is the silent storytelling, like being able to tell massive amounts of content without using words. The other thing is, like, it made me really want to go pet my dogs. Like,
well, like, yeah, it's interesting because, like, at least from a writing standpoint, that's, like, it's something that's, like, super difficult but super rewarding to do is do.
I mean,
like,
you can't, and it's, like, the best medium to do it through, too, because it's hard to do a quote-unquote silent story in a book.
Because then it's just narration, and that's not really that weird. But in film and, like, comics,
But even in film, you get the added bonus of the music, which can help, you know, change tone and, you know, feel. But
cough, first 30 minutes of WALL-E cough.
Oh, man.
They're also apparently doing a manga for that, too. I just looked at it at the back of that. So, anyways.
What was it? Just on this discussion, because we've got a moment, we can just take that thought. it's interesting that it asks so much of the reader too. Like that's a weird. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Like you have to be able to follow along, and I think it's great that it makes people spend more time on the art.
I probably shouldn't have sped through it as fast as I did, but I was also falling asleep on my couch, so I'm like,
yeah.
But, yeah, you gotta stop speed reading these books, man. They get to like.
Yeah, that is kind of interesting that you bring that up, like that that like you'd think that something with more words requires more reading, but it's actually about, in this like it requires more reading into.
It's about recognizing emotions which I think in our society sometimes we do have a difficult time reading.
Well, and you're also the emotions interpreted through an artist, mm-hmm. so you're not like, they have to actually communicate that well.
And not just emotions, but specific, like, context clues that are left in panels about stuff. You know, like, I'm trying to think of a good example from, like, Barrier.
It's really, really pretty, though. Like, honestly, I'm, like, half tempted to buy an extra one of it so I can pull it apart and hang them on my wall.
It's a pretty book.
So, I mean, I'd suggest it. And it's for people of all ages. It's not just for kids, so.
Nice. But
I would say final hit. We can do the Mighty Morphin Power Rangers 2018 annual Shattered Grid. Fucking sweet!
There, to me, is very little to say about this. If you're a fan of Power Rangers and you haven't read it, you need to be reading this.
Especially even for the older audience, because the first set of ones that you run into are the Zeo Rangers. So you run into a later form Tommy, which if you've been reading, which you should have been, because, like, it's, what, 2 issues behind now that happened?
Yes.
So it even comes into play with the whole, the universe being, instead of being a linear object, it's now a conglomeration of everything. So the Zeo Tommy is alive, even though he died.
Yes,
in Mighty Morphin,
because the way that the grid fractured, the existing time period stayed.
Yeah.
So everything that happened is still there. It's not being affected yet.
Yeah. So because there,
what?
Yeah, it breaks your mind a little bit because it's like time, but it's not time.
But it makes total sense because you're having an event that's occurring with the existing timeline as it was. So it's like by setting the time, like it's broken into itself. The paradoxes can't happen until the end of the story. Mm-hmm. Like everything will then sort of reset.
So, like fucked up joke of the comic too. Lord Drakon's having a real fun time killing himself too.
Yeah, because
he kills Zeo Tommy as well. I'm like, I feel like he's gonna keep going through these areas, and I think he's gonna probably show up in Dino Rangers and try and kill him again too. And I'm just like, stop killing yourself.
It's
God.
A weird, like there's this weird. And this was the first issue I got this in, where Drakon, I don't know.
I don't remember what it is. They've told me.
I want to say Drakon, because I like that pronunciation. Lord Drakon is kind of reconciling why the other versions of Tommy were so beloved.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's because he never left Rita's side, so he was always a villain.
Mm-hmm.
And the different versions that had turned have become like key elements of the Power Rangers franchise.
That first comic, he sits and talks to Jason about how Jason originally felt about him.
Yeah.
Because in Zeo, in case anybody knows, and I'm not saying I'm sad to know this, but I know too much about the Power Rangers. So Jason eventually comes back as the Gold Ranger in Zeo. And then he's leaving to go somewhere else now or something.
He's finally, like, retiring from Rangerdom.
He's like, you know, I'm done. I want to keep moving. But he talks to him about how he originally felt. And he's like, you know, I know that you had a hard time and I'm sorry. And they talk to him about that. And then you realize that it's actually Lord Drakon who disguised himself. And I'd like to point out, too, he's having a good time killing Rangers, man. He takes out the Blue Ranger, which was he was the Red Ranger.
Turbo?
Yes, it was Turbo, because he took Tommy's mantle, I believe, as well. And I'm like, is he going to kill Tommy and Turbo, too? Like, Jesus!
Yeah.
But he kills TJ, and he does it in the most fucked up way possible, because I don't remember what this one is. Power Rangers in Space?
Mm-hmm.
I think is what it's called. And he's having a hard time accepting that he's, you know, second cookie. And he ends up trying to stop him by releasing an airlock. Drakon cuts his mask, and he ends up in space, and he's just sitting there lifeless and freezing to death. So, I mean, This is not the Power Rangers of yonder.
No.
When it was...
It does make you want to go back and sort of, like, look at some of the Power Rangers stories, though.
They're terrible to watch, but at the same time...
Wikipedia is fine to get some summary stuff.
But
For some reason, I'm just thinking in my head now, like, open the pod bay doors, Lord Draken. I'm sorry, Yellow Ranger. I can't do that.
So, it's a really good series. It's definitely not a... It's for yesteryear of... Especially if you know about the different storylines of Power Rangers, it's even better.
It's building the mythology, though.
Oh, yeah, like, totally.
It's definitely saying...
But it's also pushing it to that adult form, because I don't actually know, like, the newer Power Rangers, I don't know that much about.
Yeah, I know nothing about that stuff.
I hit an end point. I watched, the original Dinosaur one?
Dino Thunder,
and that's because What's-His-Name came back.
Yep.
And that was the whole reason I watched it.
I watched it on syndication for that reason.
He was one of my favorite characters, so...
Definitely grew up as the Green Ranger, White Ranger fan, so...
Right. Didn't.
Cool. Well, I think that was a boat ton of reviews. So,
One metric ton of reviews.
Rigsecko! All right.
Cool. Well, all right. Yeah.
I guess that's it.
Yeah, that is it.
Yeah.
All right. Well, let's all say goodbye then.
Bye.